Hello and welcome to UK Carcast, the podcast by non-sport trading car collectors for non-sport trading car collectors. I'm your host Paul Bynes and this is episode 18, The Golden Show. Hello and welcome to the podcast. In this episode, Harris Tozer comes on to tell me all about the 50th Philly Show held in Allentown at the beginning of May. He also tells me about the current issue of Non-Sport Update magazine featuring a brand new Star Trek cover to tie in with the Star Trek movie. And if you haven't seen the Star Trek movie, by the way, I'd recommend it most highly. Also on the show, Mark de Groot calls all the way from Holland to tell me about the Utrecht Collectors Show that he attended earlier in the year, and also to chat about the state of the hobby in Holland. And finally, we have Chris Kersey, who will be making a regular appearance on the show to bring us news from the world of sketch cards. Chris is the man behind the Sketch Collectors website. More information about that in the conversation I have with Chris, but I thought I'd take this opportunity for his first appearance on the podcast to talk about his background, his influences, and his interest in the hobby in general. Regular readers of Non-Sport Update magazine will recall the Cards Found column, in which readers of the magazine submitted cards that they had found recently. These were usually oddball or unusual FOMO cards. Certainly one of the most frequent contributors to that column was Dan Hemphill, and in a post made by Harris Tozer earlier this week, it was announced that Dan had unfortunately recently passed away. I never personally had any dealings with Dan, though I know that there are bound to be people listening to this podcast who did. Nevertheless, I always enjoyed reading his contributions to that particular column to see exactly what he had found. He always managed to find some most unusual cards. I would therefore like to offer my deepest sympathies to his family and his friends, and indeed to anyone who knew him in any way. Regular listeners may remember that Nathan Ohlendorf came onto the show a couple of episodes ago to talk about his upcoming Legends and Lore set. Nathan, aka Sad Little, is a regular on the Scoundrel bulletin board and an accomplished artist in his own right. During the course of my conversation with Harris Tozer, I did mention that Nathan's wife was going through some serious health issues, and I wanted to pass on my very best to her and to Nathan and his family. The good news is, since recording that, Nathan's wife has been released from hospital and does seem to be making an improvement in her health. Hopefully this will continue. I would like to take this opportunity to offer her and Nathan's family all the very best. And now we move to Harris Tozer. It's the welcome return of Harris Tozer to UK Carcast. Harris, how you doing?
Very good, Paul. How you doing?
I'm fine, thank you very much. Yes.
Thanks for having me back.
Hey, always a pleasure to get you back on the show. Harris, of course, is the production manager of Non-Sport Update magazine and is our regular correspondent on the Carcast. I'm just back from the Star Trek movie, and I know you've seen it as well. Cracking the show. Looking forward to seeing what they do with that one. And, of course, Rittenhouse has cards out for that one already, or I think they're out already. Ready, aren't they?
Yeah, they are out already.
And, of course, there's a Star Trek connection with you, which we'll come to later on, or at least with the magazine. And we'll come to that one a little later on in the conversation.
Okay.
First thing I want to talk to you about, of course, well, Inkworks, since we last spoke, has ceased normal trading. I think when we last conversed on the subject, it was a case of we were hoping no news is good news. That obviously hasn't been the case. Right. Inkworks have now officially announced, through you, in a way, that they have ceased normal trading.
Right. We're very sad to see them go.
They were one of the bigger names in the hobby and a very strong supporter of the hobby in many ways.
Right.
Ranging from the sets they produced to the customer service that they had with the various collectors who bought their products.
Right.
And the huge range of promos they used to put out. So it is a big shame to see them go.
Right, it sure is. They certainly had a great run and a lot of great sets, but we're sad. As I said, sad to see them go.
Yeah. It's not necessarily the end of the story for, or the end of the line for, some of the licenses that they had. I know another number of other companies have picked up some of those licenses.
That's right.
Rittenhouse have picked up Lost, I believe, haven't they?
Yeah, that's what we're hearing. Rittenhouse picked up Lost, and rumor has it that NECA and ECA has the Twilight license.
Regent, yeah.
Right, the Ghost Whisperer license.
Yeah, and mention of Regent brings me on to Philly, because you had some Regent were set up at the show, and they
that's right.
Some Philly exclusives, and of course this was the 50th Philly show. show.
That's right.
Being held at Allentown, and you had some special stuff going on there. Now, I know there's been some discussion on Car Talk about the show, and there's been some pictures, and one enterprising attendee actually took some video.
That's right. That which was Bill DeFranzo, our press guide editor.
Yeah, and that video is on YouTube. If anybody's interested in seeing that, go to Car Talk, and you'll find the Philly discussion there, and you'll find links to the YouTube video. From the video and from the pictures that have been posted so far, it looks like it was an extremely busy show. How did you find it?
It was a nice pickup after several so-so shows in a row here. It was a nice pickup. I think a lot of people were into coming to the 50th show, and we had a tremendous outpouring of promos from the manufacturers, so I think that helped too. And we had some happenings going on. We had NAR there, and Sean Pence Patrick, and Ken Kelly, and some of these other artists, and I think that brought in some people. People wanted to see these artists, and it was great. It was really, really good feeling walking around, and there was a lot of excitement at the show.
Yeah, so it was very busy, so you got a much better attendance than perhaps you have in recent shows.
Yeah, there was definitely a bump from the last one to this one.
Yeah, and hopefully that's something that isn't just for the 50th. It might continue for future shows.
Yeah, we hope so. We hope so. A lot of people, you know, that we had some new people coming out and experiencing the show for the first time, so we hope they'll come back, and we just hope that this will be the start of an upswing for the show.
Yeah, well, that'll be good. You had a few other events in the periphery of the show. You had a special dinner, I know, in honor of the writers.
Right, of the Richters.
Richters, pardon me.
It's okay. We've been saying incorrectly ourselves for many years, but it's actually the Richters. And we had a special 50th show anniversary dinner on Saturday night for the Richters, and we had a presentation to go along with it. It was really pretty cool.
Yeah, I think you've made that presentation available online at somewhere, haven't you? Or a version of it.
We've actually had two sets of different presentations. We had a slideshow that was showing before the dinner, and that actually is on YouTube right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a video presentation too that we had one of our writers MC, Dave Thompson, MC'd that, and that is not on YouTube. It may be in the future, but it sort of loses something without the person MCing it. So
yeah.
I don't know if we'll put that on or not, but the slideshow is definitely on there already.
Yeah. And Dave is, of course, the guy responsible for the university,
non-sport university
column. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So regular readers of Car Talk will know him from. Regular readers of Non-Sport Update will recognize him from there.
Right.
So, and you did mention you had a few first timers turn up. One of whom is, of course, our occasional guest on this show, Don Norton, who made the journey out from Illinois to visit you.
Yeah, he made quite a long trek with a friend of his, and he wanted to come out just to see. I think he want. I take it that he's always wanted to come to the show, but the fact that it was the 50th one sort of what drove him out there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if I'd had the opportunity, I'd have been there myself. But it's just a little bit too far to come over.
Yeah, but we could have used that video podcast that people are calling for.
Well, I know. You know, it's as I mentioned in a post on Car Talk, if anyone wants to pay for me to go over, I'll go over next time. So
that's all right.
Give it another 50 shows. I'll come over for the 100th.
All right.
So, we mentioned the promos. You had a fair number of promos there. What sort of stuff was available?
Well, we actually gave out 10 promo cards at the door, which was just amazing. We had 3 Philly cards that we always give away, and then we had a Ghost Whisperer card, and a Dexter card, and a movie card from movie posters, I should say, from Bryant. All 3 of those cards. We had a Wolverine card from Rittenhouse Archives. We had Monster Wax giving us a Shock Stories card. We had a card from iCards, America at War. We had a promo for that, and I'm probably missing one or two, but I'm not sure what I'm missing, but I'm sorry about anything I'm missing, but yeah, it was just phenomenal. And then, in addition to those 10, there were another probably 10 or 14, 15 more that collectors could get if they walked around the room from Rittenhouse and from Bryant and from Monster Wax and Art Box, who was there, and a couple of others. So it was great.
Yeah. So overall, pretty good show, and everybody that attended left happy.
Yeah, I would think so, especially if you're a promo card collector. But you know, the show is a lot more than just the promos. You know, we try to have a good selection of dealers there with new stuff and with vintage stuff, and we really try to monitor, you know, what everyone has to make sure that we have a good mix of both kinds of cards. And I would think that people walked away happy in that regard. Too.
Sure. And of course, it's a great opportunity to socialize with fellow collectors. And I know this show, after the dinner, a few of you got together to participate in that great idea that we have at British shows, which is go to the pub and have a
few
beers.
That's right. But our pub was not really a British pub style at all. It was quite the opposite, actually. We went to a local Red Robin restaurant only because it was close to the hotel where where most of us were staying at. But we had a great time. I think there were about 15 or so of us there, and that was a lot of fun, including Nara was there, and some of the artists, Kate Red Bradley and a couple of others, had shown up. So, of course, that makes it fun.
So, it's, again, as I said, it's a good opportunity to socialize and exchange gossip and chit-chat and maybe even indulge in a little trading with whatever you manage to pick up at the show during the day. So.
Find out about what promos are being handed out, maybe find out something that you might have missed, that kind of thing. So it's good,
So you ran over, was it 2 days?
Yeah, that was over 2 days. We had the dinner on Saturday night. We had a good day on Sunday. We had gotten some promos from Paul Malera from the Chicagoland show. He had given us a selection of like 20 different cards to give out to the first 150 people who walked through the door on Sunday. We went through all of those, and we had a promotion on Saturday where we gave the 50th person through the door $50 for the 50th show, and that was courtesy of the rapper. So we had a lot of things going on.
Yeah, so all in all, a good busy weekend, and a good indication that the hobby hasn't died just yet.
That's right.
It's keeping on going, so this is cool. You got another one coming up, have you? Have you got another one planned this year?
Yeah, we'll be doing the 51st show in October. I believe the dates are 10th and 11th, but too many things to remember. Anyway, check our site and check the Richter's Show.com website for dates on that. But yeah, that's in October.
Watch this space for further information is basically that one. But there will be another one. The 50th, just because it's a special number, isn't the last one. The Richter's are going to be continuing their involvement, of course, and continuing to help them with that.
Yeah, definitely.
Good eye. Hopefully the card market will have an upturn by then, and or the economy will have an upturn by then.
Yeah, let's all hope the economy has an upturn by then as well.
More stuff going on out there as well. Right. Okay, moving on from the show, and you have the latest issue is actually out now, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And this is what I was referring to earlier. There's a Star Trek connection. You actually have a cover designed to tie in with the new film and the new Rittenhouse set.
That's right. Yeah, we do. We've got art from the new movie on the cover and inside the magazine. Mm-hmm.
So there's a fairly extensive article about, I'm assuming, more about the card set from Rittenhouse than about the film itself.
Right.
But what else have you got going on in the magazine this issue?
Well, we have our usual lineup of outstanding articles.
No, of course.
Of course.
one would expect no less.
That's right. As we talked about earlier, we do have an article about Inkworks and the end of an era for them. Mm-hmm. So collectors can read about that. And we have an article about the new Transformers cards and the movie. And we have an article about the new Kiss cards from Press Pass.
Sorry to interrupt you there, Harris, but I did see on the front page of Nonsport Update website, and of course if anyone wants to go and have a look at that, it's www.nonsportupdate.com. You had a list of the articles coming up, and I saw that link to the Kiss set, and I thought, I had for a brief moment of confusion. I couldn't work out whether that's a brand new set for Kiss or whether it was one of your from the archives type articles, because there have been sets from Kiss in the past.
Yeah, there's been lots of them, but this is a new one from Press Pass. In fact, it's the first of at least two, because they've announced a second series coming right on the heels of this one. I think it's coming out in the summer or maybe August or something like that. So they've got the license now and are doing a couple of sets.
I have to ask, is there much interest in, I know there's a lot of interest still in the band, over here there's still a lot of interest in the band, but is there much crossover between fans of the band and collectors of cards?
Well, I think the reason Kiss keeps coming up, I guess they have such a diehard audience and a lot of collectibles, and they just seem, it seems like Kiss memorabilia goes well with collectors and with the band's fans.
Yeah.
So I think they support these projects.
Sure. Oh, well, fair enough. So I'll be honest with you, it's not a subject that's ever piqued my interest, but I noticed that one, and I know in the past you have done a variant issue for Kiss.
That's right, yeah. That actually sold very briskly, too.
Yeah.
So I know those Kiss diehards are out there.
And they're hardcore, and they're keen, and they'll collect anything.
And Kiss does have, from what I understand, they do have a new album in the works.
Right.
So it's not completely a retro act.
A lot of these older bands, and I'm hoping anybody that's a fan of these older bands, and bear in mind that both Harris and I are fans of bands from the 80s, so we know of which we speak. They do seem to be popping out of the woodwork at the moment. There's a lot of old bands are popping up with new albums or
that's right.
new gigs or new lineups or whatever. So
Right.
Yeah. So, sorry, I was interrupting you. That's okay. About the Kiss article as well, and what else have you got in there?
Well, besides the ones I mentioned, we also have another one about the Battlestar Galactica Season 4 set from Rittenhouse Archives, mm-hmm. and then our usual lineup of columns and things. We have the Non-Sport University, which actually touches on collecting cards in a hard economy, which is very appropriate.
Timely,
right now.
Yes.
Yes. And we have a really cool feature on promo cards. It's a two-sided thing where one person writes what's bad about promo cards and why he doesn't like promo cards and even promo card collectors. And then we have our usual promo column from Bill DeFranza, who is taking the opposite side and saying why promo cards are great and why they're helping the hobby. So you can read a point-counterpoint kind of thing on promos, which is interesting.
Yeah. That's another article that's possibly quite timely, given that probably the biggest producer of promos was Inkworks, who are, of course, now exiting the market. So there maybe won't be quite so many promos out there as there once were.
Well, I don't know, though, because look what happened at Philly. There was more promo cards at Philly than ever before, and Inkworks wasn't part of that mix.
Sure.
So
maybe.
I don't know. I mean, you know, you had the 50th thing going, so that sort of got some more promos in the mix, but it certainly hasn't died off with them leaving.
Yeah. You mentioned you got the regular articles, including the Cards Online column, which I believe John Doyle writes about a guy I spoke to in the episode 16, which is Nathan Ohlendorf, about his Legends of Lore set.
That's right. We do have an article about that.
Yeah.
A good chunk of the Cards Online column is covering the set from Sad Little Stuff.
Yeah, and I believe you've actually got a promo from him in the magazine as well, haven't you?
Not this but we do have one. That's no problem. We do have one coming up, and that'll be in the next issue.
Right, okay. And I should just take this moment just to send out my very best wishes to Nathan and his family. As some listeners who frequent Scoundrel in particular may know, Nathan's wife is going through a period of ill health at the moment, and there's a lot of people who are concerned about Nathan's family. So I'd like to send out our very best wishes to them and hope everything works out for them in the best way possible.
Right, definitely.
Yeah. Seeing as I've managed to completely get your promo lineup wrong this time, what have you got in the promos this issue?
Well, this issue we have two cool promo cards from Rittenhouse. We have an X-Men Archives promo and a Battlestar Galactica Season 4 promo.
No Star Trek promo?
No Star Trek promo. We had a Star Trek promo that we previewed last issue.
Right.
That was also from Rittenhouse. So we were a little bit early on that one. But yeah, we had that in the last
issue. Right, okay. That was for... Was that for the film? Was that movie set? Or was that...
Yeah, that was for the movie. That was a real early promo.
Shows how much I pay attention to the promos.
That's okay. It's really hard to keep up with
them all. I do apologize. I keep... Well, it takes so long for the magazine to get to me that by the time it does arrive, you know.
Yeah, you're probably just seeing that Star Trek promo now.
I haven't seen it yet, but there you go. I jest. And of course, we had opened that box day, which we covered in episode 17. And I assume you've got some sort of coverage of Open That Box Day in the magazine this time, have you?
Well, we do have a little bit of coverage. Not a whole lot, but we do have a little bit of coverage and a few pictures popping up. Mm-hmm. And I'll leave that as a surprise for
listeners,
for
yes.
collectors and listeners. But there is a tie-in to this show, but let's just leave it at it.
Yes, okay. I already have an inkling of what this might be, and I'm going to say absolutely nothing about this. But there you go. So, no, you haven't got any other promotions going on with the magazine at the moment. I know your $3 for $5 promotion went down very well with the collectors, as far as I understand. But that's finished now, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty much over. And, we're short of tween promotions right now, but we'll have some things coming up, I'm sure of it, in the summertime.
Yeah. Did they actually... I mean, collectors have said to me that they really appreciated having that offer on the back issues. Did that work well for you?
Yeah, it did work pretty well. Actually, it was a lot of work because we don't generally have all those issues in stock. We had to keep running and getting more of the issues because there are so many of them. But it worked well. It worked well, and maybe we'll do that again next year.
You create some shelf space anyway.
Definitely, yeah. We had a lot of orders for those. So it was a good promotion because it was basically three for the price of one.
Yeah, effectively. I know that was obviously available to international readers as well, but it wasn't quite
that's
cheap.
Right.
But it's still...
it was the same price. it's just higher shipping. More on postage, yeah. Which is...
But it's still a pretty good deal for some of those back issues, and I know a number of people who maybe are new to the magazine and new to promo collecting took the opportunity to pick up some of those gaps in their collection that they had. They managed to fill in a few.
That's right. A few of those issues were issues that we've been out of or listed as out of before, too. Sure. Or we're not the most organized with our warehouse space. Some of these issues just sort of... We find them.
It's somewhat like the warehouse in the Indiana Jones films, where there's a big crate containing something amazingly rare. You just have to remember where you put it.
Yeah, not quite like that, but.
Oh dear. Okay, so anything else you want to chat about on this episode, or do you want to wait for the next one?
Well, I can't think of anything else right now. Not that I can think.
No. So anything you can talk about the next issue? I mean, that's still being prepped, I dare say. So you're just recovering from releasing this one and finish it.
No, we're actually actively working on the next issue. That'll be out in early July, and that one has a little bit something different on the cover for us. We're doing a Shock Stories cover with Monster Wax.
Oh, right, yes.
So this is in all original new artwork set that they've been working on for quite some time. It's actually two sets in one, but I'll let Monster Wax tell that a little bit better. I think they're trying to keep the lid on part of that, at least for now.
Okay, well, Harris... it's been a little brisker than usual, but none the worse for it.
That's okay. Less is better.
Less is more, though. Eric would probably disagree with that fact, but there we go.
I doubt it.
And you have got a little cadre of fans out there. They do like you. Nobody else does, but they do.
I don't know. Jury's still out.
Well, exactly. Okay, Harris, thank you once again for coming on to the show, and look forward to talking to you again next time.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot. Thanks again for having
me. Okay. I've been speaking to Harris Tozer, production manager at Nonsport Update Magazine, and you can get more information about the magazine at their website, which is nonsportupdate.com. That was Harris Tozer. Now, moving from America to mainland Europe, I spoke to Mark de Groot, who is a regular collector and former dealer in trading cards, who attended the recent collectors show in Utrecht, a show that, as I mentioned in my conversation with Mark, Harris Tozer and NSU set up at a few years ago. We've covered shows on UK Carcast in the past, mainly in the UK and America, but now, as a bit of a first for the show, we're going to be looking at a show that's held on mainland Europe in Utrecht in the Netherlands. And to talk about the show, we have Mark de Groot. Mark was there this year. It was on April the 18th and 19th. Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Hi, Paul. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Welcome to Car Talk, and welcome to to our first mainland European on the show.
Yeah, I heard. Cool.
Just briefly before we get into the show, what's your background in cards? Have you been collecting long?
Well, on and off, I've been about 6 or 7 years now, I'd say. But my history more goes back into the working field.
Yeah.
You know, besides trading cards, you have the trading card games like, you know, Magic the Gathering, Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And in the past, I had my own store that was in around 2002-2004, mm-hmm. and for 1 year I worked with a game distributor company in the Netherlands.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So you've got a useful background on both the collector's side of things and the dealing side of things. So.
Yeah. These days I'm all about, you know, buying and working on my own collection, and I'm on eBay.com a lot for that.
Right.
In the past it was on the selling side of things.
So now you're concentrating mainly on collecting, and of course you're using all sorts of avenues to expand your collection, including card shows. So this brings us to the big show in Utrecht. Can you tell us a little more about that?
Well, the show in Utrecht is not a lot about cards, of course, because in the Netherlands there are only a few, or a handful, you could say, of collectors. Mm-hmm. It's really a huge show. It's held twice a year, and it's focused on all kinds of collectors. So if you're a collector of stamps or antiques or, you know, final records or whatever you can think of, you can go to Utrecht twice a year.
And it's always held at the same venue there, yeah?
It's the largest venue in Holland we have for any kind of fair, so all the big fairs are held there and or in Amsterdam. That those are only the two main halls.
Yeah. So is it fairly well attended? I mean, obviously there's people there going there for comic books and action figures and toys as well as cards, but I assume is that there's a good attendance for it?
Well, it kind of, this year it wasn't that good of an attendance, as I've spoken to a few of the sellers over there, of course, and I asked them about it, and it was busier last year and the year before. I think they have a little bit of trouble with the economy now, and fairly really, really easy this time to walk around and have time to talk with the sellers, and you know, in when people have lots of money to spend, you don't get a chance to talk that much.
No, there's too many crowds, and you have to fight your way down the various corridors. I know from some of the British shows in the past, almost impossible to move for rucksacks and things. So what in particular did you notice was selling or was being sold at the show this time?
Well, there's one thing, if I'm going towards the cards.
Yeah.
There's one thing in particular that's different here, I believe, than in America. I've never been to a show in America, but I've heard, I think on your show, by the way, that in America there's not a lot of single cards being sold.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the dealers in Europe always focus mainly on the single cards and sets, autograph cards, or stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you very rarely see sealed boxes over here.
Oh, right, yes. Well, so I suppose it's getting to that sort of way over here in the UK as well. There are fewer and fewer sealed boxes coming over as the distribution is going.
Yeah, well, over here in Holland, the market is so small. There are only three or four who specialize in trading cards here.
Yeah.
And I believe two or three of them are collectors themselves.
Right.
So it's a part-time thing for them, I think.
So they get a few boxes in, they open them themselves rather than offer them for sale.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Now, what were you looking for in particular for your personal collection, and did you have much luck in finding anything?
Well, yes. I mainly focus on Star Wars. That's the core of my collection. I have everything from going to all the way back from the start, also trading card game, you name it, I try to collect it.
Yeah.
More recently, I've been expanding to the popular TV licenses like Heroes, also Indiana Jones, Lost, those kind of cards.
Yeah, and I understand, because obviously we had an exchange of emails before you came onto the show, I understand you had a good bit of luck.
Yeah, there were a few dealers who had some great bargains. I was able to pick up some really, you know, odd stuff too.
Yeah.
For example, I picked up a box of Terminator 2, the movie, trading card stickers.
Yeah.
It's from all the way back from 1992.
Right.
I paid about €5 for the box, and I got about four or five full sets of those.
the current UK to euro exchange rate, I think that works out about £4. It's probably about the same in dollars, about €5. €5 is about £5, so that's quite a good bargain.
Yeah, this now at the moment it's quite cheap for us to come to the UK, and
yes,
we are seeing a decline of visitors from the UK over here, especially in Amsterdam.
Mm. The exchange rate and the credit crunch has really, really hit the pound badly. I know there are fewer people going to America for precisely the same reason.
Yeah, of course.
We used to get all sorts of big bargains. Of course, it's a great opportunity for Americans to come to the UK and to Europe, because they're getting a great exchange rate now.
Yeah, well, and the other way around, you know, for us to go to the States right now, it's a great deal.
So you're bypassing us. It's not fair.
Well, now, I'll be flying through London this time around. I'm actually going to New York and to Florida in a few months.
Ah, right. Okay. that's for vacation or for business?
Vacation.
So you'll be looking out for card stores when you're on the way over there, I dare say.
Yeah, if anyone has any tips, please let me know.
Email into me, I'll pass any messages on for useful tips. Okay. Now, you said it's obviously not a big show for cards, but there are card dealers there. Is there much of a card presence? I mean, obviously, there's a lot of base cards and singles and things like that.
Half of the table is base cards, sealed packs with full sets of base cards,
mm-hmm.
And the other half is buying this with the chase cards.
Right.
That's what you see a lot.
And they're well attended by the collectors. As you said earlier, it's a smallish market in comparison to maybe America, but you mentioned obviously that there isn't a huge market in the Netherlands for card collecting. Are there enough people that would go to the show to make it worth a dealer's while setting up there?
Well, it's kind of hard to say. I would think so, because, you know, the dealers are still there, but I do see that there are less dealers now than there were a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like there were six now and four of six then and four now.
Yeah.
So it's not that much of a difference, but I think the dealers who are still there are, you know, the hardcore collectors themselves. themselves mainly.
Yeah.
And also do the dealings.
Yeah. I suppose a greater part, this is something that tends to come up at some of the shows I've been to, a greater part of the show is the fact that they get to meet the regular collectors who become friends over time and they trade and they do deals.
That's the main thing. That really is the main thing. Actually, for me also, that was the most surprising for me. Last time I was at the show was 1.5 years ago when Harris was also there. Mm. And I didn't collect that much in the meantime. But this time around, I was talking with a few dealers, Dutch people also. And it was really like making friends and exchanging, email addresses and stuff like that, so we could trade off parts later.
Yeah.
So that really is a good thing about going to a show, you know, meeting people.
Yeah, it's sort of a real life Facebook, if you will.
Yeah, we're also used to the digital age right now.
I know, that's the thing. I think so many collectors are used to going on eBay and going on to places like Card Talk or Scoundrel or Facebook even and meeting people up there that it's quite a novelty when you actually get to meet someone in person and say, oh, by the way, have you got? It's quite amazing. So obviously, the show, as you mentioned, the show isn't just about cards. I know you mentioned in some of the emails we've been exchanging and in your show report that you posted on Card Talk, there were some celebrities there doing some signings as well.
Yeah, that's right. There were, I think, 4 or 5 celebrities. Three not that mentionable, small parts like Stormtrooper number 6 in the background somewhere in A New Hope.
Yeah,
that category. And the two I found cool that they were there were the Alo Alo actors, Herr Flick and Helga.
Ah.
So I got a picture of them and the autograph and
oh, that's good. So yeah. It's always good to see someone, a celebrity or an actor from a show that's quite popular.
You know, what's a really big difference for those kind of people to come to Holland or to, you know, a bigger show like, I don't know, London Film and Comic Con or Celebration Europe, which was in 2007. I was there.
All right.
Star Wars actors, yeah.
Yeah.
And for example, a few years ago, we had Ray Park here at the small venue. Darth Maul.
Yes.
And it was like a 2-minute wait and you could get his autograph and have a chat and take a picture.
Yeah.
Very relaxed, not that busy. And if you saw the queue in London, it was, 2-hour wait, and it's really not to compare. I think it's not that attractive for the actors to come to Holland, to be fair.
I was at the big celebration show we had at the London Expo way back, and we actually did an episode there. And I know what you mean. The queues were phenomenal for that one, and you really didn't get much more of a chance than to shove your photo in front and sign it and away, which is a shame. So a lot of the smaller ones, you do get a chance to chat, and it really is rather nice. So so overall, the show, a bit quieter than in past visits that you've been to it, but you think it should still keep going on. There's enough hardcore collectors of all sorts that will keep it going.
Yes, absolutely. The Dutch are known for their collecting habits, and it's not... there is a reason why we have such a big collector show twice a year. Mm. You know, most shows that I know of are once a year, but this is actually twice, and it's 5 or 6 huge halls,
Yeah.
One hall full of antiques, one hall full of music, and, I was mainly of toys. But there are so many things you can do and see there, and, the real collector could just easily browse around for 2 days and not even see everything.
Yeah, I know when Harris went, he was quite excited by the music hall, because he's a fan of certain 80s bands that we won't name at the moment, but I know he was anxiously looking forward to going. Every time he comes over to the UK, you can find him in a record store.
Okay.
I think if he could find an excuse not to go to the show and just go to a record store,
the music hall is really, really large, and if you have a few artists of special interests at that time when you're there, you can, search for them, and the next time you're around, search for other artists, and it stays fun.
Yes, exactly. So you mentioned... the Dutch are big collectors. So how does that reflect itself in the outside world outside of the show? Is it particularly easy for, say, for example, a car collector to go out onto the street and buy a card or buy a pack?
That's virtually impossible.
Yeah.
The only thing you find in stores these days are Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh! Trading card game cards. And there's a really small group of gaming hobby stores. Mm-hmm. I think there are about 20 to 30 stores in the whole of the Netherlands. Mm-hmm. But they focus on all kinds of board games and card games. So you can get, miniature games and Magic the Gathering and all stuff like that.
Yeah.
But not very rarely, let's just put it like that, trading cards. That's really an American product, I believe. And, if you're really interested, you buy internationally, and that's the only way to go.
Yeah. And that sort of answers my next question, which is there much in the way of locally produced product? Are there any Dutch companies producing cards or stickers?
The Dutch All-Stars Eredivisie cards. Eredivisie, it's the highest league of soccer.
Oh, right, yes.
I'll call it soccer for you Americans, by the way, because,
We both know it's football.
It's football, come on.
Yeah, exactly.
All-Stars brings out a series of I think 200 or 300 base cards every year with soccer players.
Yeah.
Like sports cards in America with the baseball and stuff.
Yeah.
So we have that over here, but that's about it.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest European companies are probably the Italian companies like Panini or Merlin and places, companies like that.
I have right here that this set of All-Stars is produced by, let me check, Magic Box International. I believe it's a company from Spain or something.
Ah, yes, I think I've heard of them. Yeah, they've done a few odd little sets here and there that pop up from time to time. Talking about boxes, and you mentioned there isn't much in the way of stores in the high streets, so you tend to have to go onto eBay. I know you had a bit of spectacular luck on eBay recently.
Absolutely.
Spill the beans, as they say.
Spill the beans. Well, I've been of the show Heroes since the start, and it was about time I started collecting those cards, I thought to myself. So I went to eBay, bought a box of Heroes Volume 1, Volume 2. I got the Volume 1 box first, opened it, and it was an okay box. I had a single autograph card, nothing that fancy. A few days later, I got my Season 2 box, and about halfway through the box, I suddenly got that dual autograph card.
Wow.
I pulled the card. I was like, hey, there are two autographs. Oh my God. I was like, jumping up and down in my living room like when my favorite soccer club scores the goal for the championship or something like that.
Yeah.
It's really amazing.
So you got that in pride of place in your collection now then.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. It's always a great thrill when you pull something like that. I mentioned to you in an email a while back, and I know Card Talkers who listen to the show will be familiar with the anecdote, but a local store where I live, we still had them for a while there. I managed to buy a couple of packs of Star Trek the 35th anniversary, and out of one of those packs, it's literally a pack I bought, not a box, a pack, I pulled the William Shatner Leonard Nimoy dual autograph card, and I couldn't talk for about an hour.
Well, if you got it from a pack, that's actually even more amazing. Buy a box, you're going to get something.
Oh, you're going to get something, but it's still in the back of your mind, there's no chance of getting that dual order.
It actually wasn't this card I was particularly happy with, of course, but it wasn't actually the first time I got, the amazing amount of luck. Mm. A few years back, there was a wholesale to the public thing going on at a Dutch gaming company, and they had a few boxes of, what's it called, Battlefield Earth.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
That movie, which you really don't want to see, but, those boxes were about 10 or 15 euros or something like that.
Yes.
I just got one for the fun of it, and I got the John Travolta autograph card,
and they were pretty hard find.
Yeah, they were the hardest find. I have to be ashamed to tell you I did sell that card, but I'm not a fan.
No, that's fair enough, and I think probably even collectors would probably agree that was probably the best card out of the whole set. I know I managed to get a few boxes cheap on eBay from America and didn't get anywhere near pulling something like that, and people were getting fed up with me offering them sets. So have a base set. No, go away. We don't want.
Yeah, I still have a few around, so if anyone is interested.
Well, if anybody is interested, again, let me know, and I'll get in touch with Mark, and you can sort it out yourselves.
Just go to the Card Talk. I've got all my haves and ones all over there, and I'll try to keep it up to date.
There you go. Harris will be pleased. We've got a plug-in for Card Talk as well. So.
Absolutely.
Mark, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you for agreeing to come on and talk about the show and your outstanding good luck in getting that Heroes card. Hopefully we'll have you on again soon.
Sure, no problem. Thanks again.
Okay. I've been speaking to Mark de Groot, who's been telling us all about the big show in Utrecht earlier this year. Coming up now, we have Chris Kersey. I'm pleased to be able to introduce a new regular feature to UK Carcast. I have on the line with me now Chris Kersey. Some of you will know Chris from his Sketch Collectors website, that's sketchcollectors.com, which is at probably the most simplistic level, a gallery of sketch card art, but there's a whole lot more to that site, as I'm sure Chris will be discussing with us. Chris is going to be coming on a regular basis to talk about news in the world of the sketch card. Sketches are a large part of the non-sport collecting community now, and Chris is going to come on and tell us everything about what's going on in that world. However, for this first appearance, I thought it'd be a good idea to get a bit of background about the man himself and talk to him about his influences and how he came to the hobby. So, Chris, first of all, welcome to UK Carcast.
Well, thanks, Paul. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, thank you. Yourself?
I'm doing pretty good.
Not too bad. Chris, how did you come to get involved with the hobby in the first place?
It started with non-sports cards when I was a kid, which is probably the way most people sort of get into the hobby to begin with, and started with a lot of Marvel non-sports cards because I was into comic books and stuff like that. As I hit college and got into all sorts of other things and had, you know, some real life issues to take care of, I sort of got out of pretty much all hobbies, you know, comics and non-sports cards and everything. And, you know, as life started to settle back down, I was looking for something to devote a little bit of my time to that would be interesting for me. And it was about the time that Kingdom of the Crystal Skull was about to be released, the latest Indiana Jones film.
Yeah.
I was in a local Walmart here in the U.S. and saw the Crystal Skull trading cards. And I thought that would be interesting. They had autographs in it, which I'm also a small collector of.
Mm-hmm.
It was also when I started doing a little research on these cards, I came across sketch cards, and I thought this was, I mean, one of the biggest appeal to almost any collector, of course, is having these unique cards. The rarer the better, because, you know, that's what you're going after, or at least most collectors.
Exactly.
And so these you know, this idea of everything being one of one was very appealing, and I had a lot of education growing up, a liberal arts background, and,
yeah,
and so art has always interested me. And so it was an interesting fit, and I ran into the Scoundrel forums, and from there on I was hooked, because there's so much information there on all the artists, and, you know, with all the artists participating in the hobby, it really adds another level to the entire experience.
Mm.
Because that's allowing you to not only, you know, participate by buying, but you can also, you know, interact with these people producing this amazing work, from the Star Wars sets to the Marvel to the Indiana Jones, or, you know, any of these artists that have participated seem to make themselves very available.
It's a great thing to be able to sort of say, I'm missing a card, or I really wish I had a sketch card of this particular character, and someone comes back to you and says, well, I've got that card, or I can draw you that card, would you like it? And it makes you're expanding your collection a whole lot easier.
Right, and I think the community is what really had that depth that is keeping people in the hobby.
Exactly.
And it's the community, you know, between the artist and the collectors, and just amongst the collectors themselves.
Yeah.
It's great to you know, anytime you can be involved in anything you're passionate about in terms of, you know, any hobby, it's great to find other people that are interested in the same things that you are.
Yeah.
They keep you drawn in and keep you, you know, interacting on the level that you want to.
Exactly. So do you have much of a collection? You mentioned you only really got back into collecting cards around about the time of Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls, which was early last year. So have you got much of a collection?
Well, I started off kind of slow. You know, I was new to the hobby. I wasn't, you know, when you first get into any new hobby, learning values, learning who all the artists are, you know, finding out what you're really interested in.
Yeah.
It takes a little bit of time, and it takes a warm up. But I found, like I said, with the Scoundrel forums, it made the educational process of collecting sketch art so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got into it fairly quickly after the first couple of months.
Yeah.
And you know, eBay being what it is, I was able to get a lot of cards I was interested in. I found out I really enjoyed collecting the artist return cards.
Mm.
Also, which you know, Scoundrel's the place to go if you're looking for artist return cards, because that's, you know, like I said, that's where all the artists hang out. And so I found I was really interested in the return cards. I think for a couple of reasons. I think that in general it represents some of the artist's best work.
Mm.
And also I like the idea that the money that you're putting into the hobby is going directly to the artist, and that they're able to benefit from it, you know, as much as you are, I guess.
Should just be explained explain for listeners who may not be aware what an artist return card is. Artists are commissioned by the trading card companies to draw so many cards for the set, and most of those will be inserted in packs. But frequently, the companies will offer the artist the opportunity to take back or to be sent back a few of their drawn cards for their own personal use.
Right. It's generally, I think it's generally considered a large portion of their compensation.
Yeah.
Usually due to the fact that artist return cards, like I said, it generally represents some of the artist's best work, and the artist can sell those pieces, you know, for whatever the going rate for that artist's best work is. You know?
Yeah.
You have to realize what you're seeing on eBay in terms of, you know, if an artist is getting $300 a card, well, that artist isn't getting $300 a card.
No.
The person that cracked that case is getting the $300 per card.
Exactly. We've had a few artists on the podcast in the past, and although no one has ever actually come out and said how much they get paid, I know they don't get paid a huge amount for the cards that they submit to the companies. So this is probably their best chance of actually getting a decent return on the hours, days, and weeks that they put into drawing all of those cards. And some of them do a lot of cards.
Right. And, you know, I think the majority of artists that do these sets also offer personal sketch cards, which is where they have some sort of card stock or even cut up larger, you know, sheets of card stock that they use for handing out to collectors that want a sample of their work. But, you know, in general, the artists get far more for the return cards because, given that these are officially licensed pieces, given that there is a limited number of these cards, they're generally, you know, they're worth more on the open market than the personal sketch cards are.
And they can go for serious sums. It's not a hobby to go into lightly if you want to start collecting those things. You need to have either a reliable and safe bank balance or an understanding partner, or no other commitments whatsoever.
No, it definitely turns into a real balancing act. It's one of the more expensive hobbies, I would probably think, in terms of, you know, comic books or collecting any sort of card. It's probably one of the more expensive hobbies you could go into if you're interested in the higher end work.
Yeah, certainly for modern, currently produced collectibles, it's getting that way. We were talking about the internet earlier. Talking about the internet brings us to your website, sketchcollectors.com. Now, that's a site that I signed up with when you launched it. You launched that on Scoundrel. What was the rationale for launching that site?
Initially came from my desire to have a way to organize my own collection, and I wanted a way to be able to keep a log of sorts of all the cards that I had purchased and had an easy way to look through them without, you know, without always pulling out the box and, you know, touching them and scratching them up. And so I started just generating this database of my own cards. Mm-hmm. And the more I worked on it and the more it sort of, you know, took a life of its own, the more I thought it would be useful to other people.
Yeah.
And so that's where I started making, you know, I started doing the usual website stuff and tried to make it very user-friendly, and I wanted it to be usable by anyone. And I know that everyone's level of expertise on the computers are different levels, so I tried to take it down to its least common denominator, which is log in, get you an account, and start uploading your cards.
And that's pretty much the way it stayed ever since, and it is remarkably easy to get set up. It's free to join, isn't it?
Absolutely. There's no cost to anyone. We've got collectors on there. We have artists on there. There may be some pay services in the future, but that's stuff that we can talk about later.
But at its very heart is the gallery, where you can post up samples from your personal collection and show them to other people. And it's very simply a case of upload a scan of your particular card, type in a few basic details, and a lot of that is assisted by drop-down menus. And then click on OK, and away you go, and everybody then can see what you have in your collection. You can also put up their personal sketch cards, can't you?
Absolutely. And one of the goals of the site is to make sure that everything stays organized. Every set gets organized correctly and that all the artists get credit for their work.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I decided to do a lot of those fields by drop-down menus, which is a lot of labor on my side, adding a lot of artists and a lot of sets. But I feel like it does make for a better site rather than entrusting, you know, everyone to type in the names of everything exactly the same, and it avoids typos. And,
oh, yeah. It makes your downside easier to search for things if you're using a standardized set of names.
Right, because in this way, you know, you can go in there with, you know, even without an account, everything is browsable, everything's visible to just anyone just coming by interested in sketch cards. Go in and select any member, find out what they are collecting, selected by the set or selected by the artist. And I think it's been a great way for people to to explore the hobby a little bit more, find out about artists that they may have never heard of, and to see what everyone's pulled.
Yeah, and it's a great resource for identifying artists, because frequently the questions are posted on Card Talk and on Scoundrel. I've just pulled this really nice card from a set, but I haven't the foggiest who it's by or who it's of, and you have to rely in those cases you have to rely on somebody who's familiar with that work having a look, whereas if you go to something like Sketch Collectors, you can type in a search for Indiana Jones or Lord of the Rings, and that'll bring up all the sketches available, and you might see something in a similar style and say, oh, that's who it is, and you'll know then who drew it.
Right, and you know, on the same lines of learning the artists and learning what their styles are, you know, I know a lot of people that have said they've just spent hours on there looking for, you know, styles of art that they like, and then contacting these artists that they didn't know about until they saw them on Sketch Collectors, and then they were able to commission, you know, personal sketch cards from that artist.
Yeah, which is always a good thing to be able to do. Again, it continues that line of communication between the artists and the collectors, and possibly brings combinations of collector and artist that before the internet would never have been possible.
Right, and you know, as soon after I started the site, which just started with Collector's Gallery, I had some artists asking for, well, can I post my cards, you know, firsthand to the site, and so that's when I started the Artist Gallery, which is a new feature on the site.
Yeah,
if you go to the Artist Gallery, you can actually see cards directly posted by the artists. And hopefully in future sets, some artists will begin to post their cards directly here. And so as they finish them, as they're approved by the companies, you'll have a way to view those, you know, pretty much when they're barely dry.
Yeah. Sketch Collectors is very much, as Cardcast is really for me, a labor of love. You don't make money out of it as yet.
As of yet, no. All the services are geared towards the collectors, and I do occasionally take some very generous donations that have come to the site. You know, and I do appreciate the collectors that have given to the site, but I am trying to keep the site free to those that just want to enjoy the hobby.
Mm-hmm. So, but you did say earlier you have got some fairly large plans for the site in the future. What sort of stuff have you got to look for?
Oh, let's see. There's always the odds and ends that I'm working on. The new features. There's been talk about doing a forum, but I'm really trying not to compete with Scoundrel there. Mm. So you know, right now we do have the messaging, the private messaging that you can do between collectors.
Yeah,
I got some enhancements coming to that system. There is, for people that may not have been to the site yet, there is the ability to post your cards for sell or trade on the site.
Mm-hmm.
So right now if you go to the site, there's an easy checkbox. If you check that box, it'll show you all the cards that are available. And then you can also sort those cards that are available, by set or by artist.
Mm-hmm.
According to me looking at the site right now, there are over 1,100 cards that people are offering for sell or trade.
Wow, that's pretty good going, and compares favorably with the number of cards that you generally find doing a search for sketches on eBay. So.
Right, you know, and so basically along those lines, I mean, that's where I'd like to go with the site a little bit, is that I know there are a fair amount of people that are not always happy using the eBay system due to the cost and expense that system has come to at this point.
Yeah.
So I do plan on enhancing the for sale or for trade aspects of the site.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing official there yet. I actually don't know how far I am from having that ready, you know, for people to use, but there may be some beta testing in the near future, and we'll see where that goes.
So very much.
Like I said, I'm trying to make it affordable. You know, I want everything on the site to enhance the hobby. I'm not trying to make a living off the website.
No.
But sometimes anytime you host a site that starts getting a considerable amount of hits, there are costs and fees associated with doing that.
Oh, of course there are. Yeah, as with everything else. Okay, so very much a case of watch this space. So we've had a look at your background. Listeners now know everything they need to know about Chris Kersey. So it's time to move on to the reason you're coming onto the show on a regular basis. News from the sketch world. Have you got anything for us for your first episode?
We'll keep it a little brief this time around. We'll talk about a couple of the latest sets that have come on the market. I think the biggest one has been Star Wars Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a set that, you know, just from a non-sports perspective, a lot of people have been waiting on this set or hoping for a set like this.
Yeah.
And especially with the new sketch cards coming on since, you know, Galaxy 3 was released, it really gave the artists a very large playing field in terms of what they want, you know, what they wanted to express in terms of the Star Wars universe. The artist went all out for this set and I think produced some of the best work that I've seen since at least the Indiana Jones heritage, at least to them, in terms of such a licensed property. Mm-hmm. They've really gone all out. You know, Topps doesn't put any requirements on what the sketches have to look like or whether they have color or black and white. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when you really see the artist's passion for a particular topic.
Yeah.
Is when they're sort of Lego and said, you know, draw what you like and draw what interests you. They were given the entire Star Wars galaxy to draw, except for the holiday special. So you saw a lot of artists, of course, doing a fair amount of work on the core characters, obviously, because that's where I think the most of the collectors wanted to see.
Mm.
But they also took on a lot of the characters that were presented or first introduced in the comic books or in novels.
Yeah.
It's been an amazing set to watch because this is also, with the exclusion of the Clone Wars set that came out last year, it's the first real set where we've seen a lot of full-color Star Wars work.
Sure.
Because even the, you know, some of the previous sets, the Heritage, only a subset of the artists at that point, you know, if you look at the evolution of sketch cards in general, earlier on, they were sketch cards. They were just that. They were pencil sketches.
Yes.
Stuff like that. So.
Which are interesting in their own right, but as the whole hobby has matured, the collector has got more selective about the sort of things they want. And for a lot of collectors, if it isn't in full color with a nicely painted background and all the details and carefully signed in the corner and dated and all the rest of it, they're just not interested.
Right. I mean, every collector has their particular likes and dislikes. It's like in any hobby.
Of course.
You know,
some
artists will do a lot of color work. Some artists will do a lot of black and white work. It just depends on what you're going for. And, you know, it depends on the size of your pocket a lot of times also.
Oh, of course, yeah. Is this to say with the die cut?
Yes, it is. It's also the first sketch cards that we've seen that are actually die cut sketch cards. And they had Vader helmets and Stormtrooper helmets. And it was from the artists on these were quote unquote underground artists. I don't know if anyone ever really found out what that meant.
No, it's a
but they're very interesting cards, and they do have a very different feel and a different flavor from the typical, you know, sketch cards that you find in the packs. People really fell in love with them. They were big hits to some.
Understandable. They're quirky and slightly different, and that's something that Topps does do occasionally, is to bring in something off the wall and odd or different, just to make the collector look in a new way at something.
That was much like they did with the Indiana Jones masterpieces when they released the panoramic sketch cards.
Exactly, exactly.
For those who don't know, the panoramic sketch cards were where they actually took a 3.5x5 and folded it in half and placed it into the packs that way.
Yeah. So this set, I mean, Topps is always known for having a large roster of artists contributing to their sets. And Star Wars Galaxy is no exception to this, is it?
You know, I have to say, Galaxy, it was a large list, but I won't say that it was their largest list.
Oh, no.
They were, I think, a little bit more selective. I don't know where the selection process came from, because we actually saw a large handful of new artists on, like, Indiana Jones masterpieces.
Mm-hmm.
And those same artists were, for, you know, whatever reason they choose these artists, was not also available on the Galaxy set. So,
mm-hmm. So
I don't know if Lucas was involved in that process or, you know, LucasArts in any way.
So that was Star Wars Galaxy. You want to talk about another couple of sets as well, though, didn't you?
Yeah, another couple of sets. We got the newest set release is X-Men Origins Wolverine,
mm-hmm.
which is a Rittenhouse Archive set, and it is a set pulled directly from the movie. The artists were only allowed to choose characters that were seen in the movie, from my understanding.
Right.
And in fact, some of the cards, I think, were rejected because they weren't directly in the movie. And Rittenhouse Archives, usual vein, these are all full-color sketch art. They're beautiful work. Mm-hmm. A lot of first-time artists on this set. Not first-time artists in terms of their first official sketch set.
Yeah.
And you're looking at, I've seen a lot of different numbers in terms of how many cards you'll pull per pack.
Yeah.
Just wanted to talk about that briefly since this set is a brand new live set.
Mm-hmm.
Because what they're doing is they're doing two collectible cards per box, and those can either be autograph cards or sketch cards.
Right.
And they seem to have a large handful of people that were in the movie doing autographs. Everyone from Hugh Jackman, who plays Wolverine, of course.
Of course.
And, the director, Gavin Hood.
Right.
I've seen, you know, from case pools, I've seen that the autographs are much more common than the sketch in this particular set. I've seen anywhere from probably 4 to 7 sketch cards per case.
Right.
I don't have the exact number of boxes per case there, but so they are limited. These are limited sketch cards.
Yeah. I mean, Rittenhouse is one of the first companies to go to an all-color sketch run, aren't they?
Yes, they are. And I think some collectors like it. I think the artists like it because I assume they're being paid accordingly for doing all-color work because obviously those cards take a lot more time for the artists. The last set I want to mention is one from, I believe it was your last podcast, which was the set from Sad Littles.
Sad Little. Yes, Nathan Ohlendorf. Yes, Sad Little.
Yes. Nathan and I have been working together a little bit, and we've got some interesting things coming to sketch collectors, you know, in association with Sad Littles.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to definitely talk about the Sad Littles legends and lore set just a little bit, because the first artist-proof artist return cards have started to show up. Mm-hmm. Nathan has initially allocated 2 cards per artist.
Yeah.
And these have started to show up on eBay. And so you should, you know, check out Scoundrel, check out the Sad Littles website, maybe posting something about these.
Yeah.
Or just do an eBay search for legends and lore, and you'll see some of these cards starting to show up.
Sad Littles did put up some of the preview packs, which we were talking about in the last episode with Nathan. And some of these included some of the prototype sketch cards, which were all pretty much pencil or pencil sketches. And they went rather well on eBay. They were only up for a very short time, but they sold remarkably well. And there was a great deal of interest in the bidding on those things.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are interested in this Legend lore set because it is the only card set I've heard about that is actually brought to you by the artists. And this was, you know, the premise of the Sad Little Sketch cards or the Sad Little card set is, what do the artists want to draw? What do they want to portray?
Yeah.
You know, beyond just the licensed properties. And so Legends and Lores, of course, bringing you all sorts of characters, whatever the artist wants to draw from myth and legend. You'll see in the set, you've got everything from fairy tales to gods.
I believe the artist list for the set is still expanding.
Yes, it is. And in fact, as far as I understand, Nathan is still accepting new artists that are interested in doing it, but he already has an amazing list. He's really getting, you know, the cream of the crop to join this set. I think a lot of artists are interested in being able to do what interests them and to be able to draw these cards as they see fit. And I think it's going to be a great opportunity. And this is, from what I understand, is just the kickoff set for Sad Littles. And there are already more sets in the planning phase.
Well, anything that expands the horizons of the artists and the collectors of artist work is a good thing. So hopefully the Sad Little project, wherever it goes, will continue.
Right, and keep in mind that the Sad Little set is by the artists and for the artists, and so they will be benefiting a great deal from this set.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this is one of those few sets where, you know, we're not, you know, the artists are sort of going to be making their own money on this set, which is great. Like we said earlier on, you know, they're trying to make a living off of this.
And yeah.
All of us collectors, you know, want to help support the artists.
Yeah.
Because we want to see the hobby continue to grow.
If you buy into this set, you're not helping the man, you're helping the artist. So
something along those lines.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you again for coming on to the show. Very much look forward to getting you back on next time.
Well, thank you, Paul, and I'll be looking forward to talking to you.
Okay. Chris's website is sketchcollectors.com, and I'll be posting links to that and to the various websites that Chris mentioned in our conversation on the links page on the Cardcast website, which, of course, as always, is cardcast.co.uk. Well, that was Chris Kersey. As I mentioned in the interview, Chris will be coming on a regular basis to talk about the world of sketch cards. If you've got any news that you'd like to see discussed about sketch cards, please do send me an email. Email address is ukcardcast@googlemail.com. That's ukcardcast@googlemail.com. Or you can go to the Cardcast website, that's cardcast.co.uk. And I'm pretty sure I've got the email address lurking in there somewhere. You should also find links to the Sketch Collectors website that I mentioned in my conversation with Chris. I will be recording another artist sketch special later on in the year, probably August, and I have got a couple of people, willing victims, who have agreed to be interviewed by me for the show. However, if you're an artist and you'd like to come on and talk about your work, your influences, and life in the world of trading cards in general, please do get in touch. Again, my email address is ukcardcast@googlemail.com, and we'll see what we can do. In similar vein, if you have any news or information about the world of trading cards that you think other people listening to this podcast would be interested in, or if you're a manufacturer who would like to come on and talk about your products, or if you used to work for a trading card company, see what I'm hinting at here, and would like to talk about your experiences in the world of trading cards, please do get in touch. I am already working on episode 19. Yes, already. I have an interview lined up with a well-known non-sport trading card manufacturer. Now, I don't want to jinx anything, so I'm not going to name the manufacturer in question, but I think it should make for a really interesting interview. So listen out for episode 19, which is probably going to be online towards the end of June, beginning of July. Finally, I should apologise for the non-appearance of the special incentive card that I promised to everybody who voted in the Best of 2008 poll. It is still going to happen, I just haven't been able to get around to getting the card printed. As soon as I've got that sorted out, I will be emailing all those who voted in the poll to get contact details. So hopefully before the end of this year, you will get your exclusive promo card. UK Carcast is recorded using Pamela for Skype and a Logitech USB headset on a Windows XP PC. It's edited using Audacity and is compiled using GarageBand on a Apple Mac G4. Music provided by Sapphire Moon. MP3 hosting is courtesy of the Internet Archive at archive.org. Website hosting is by Google Pages. Email provided by Google Mail. Other web services provided by a 1&1 and Amin World. UK Carcast is released under a Creative Commons license. For more information about the Creative Commons license, please visit the website, which is at www.carcast.co.uk. That's it for episode 18. Episode 19 is on its way. Thank you for listening. And remember, one pack is not enough, even if it's the 50th.